We do want to share a bit of what Christian Connections for International Health is doing on the family planning issue on both the advocacy side. And so we have Mona Bormet, who's our project manager for our policy and advocacy work, a pro on the Hill, and managing our efforts in that area. We have grants from the United Nations Foundation. We benefited from Gates Foundation funding, from USAID funding. And we've also gotten involved in a small way in actually providing some support to some of our members in family planning programs. CCIH is not an implementing agency. We're not a program implementing agency. But we do look for ways to connect our members with resources, financial, technical, and so forth. And so we are involved to some degree in with some of these Christian health associations that were mentioned. And Amy Metzger is our project manager for those activities. So we've asked them to share as the final, to jointly share as our final presentation, and then we'll have some time for discussion and Q&A.
Hi, how's everyone doing? It got darker in the room. I was really hoping no one was sleeping. I'm Mona. Thanks for coming. So this is CCIH. This is a great picture. Don't we look happy? This is from our conference. You should come next year. It's fun. Ray's already shared a lot, so I'm going to skip ahead. Amy and I have four goals to discuss timely federal policies, learn about an international policy effort, and talk about a lot to do with reproductive health supplies and contraceptive security. So that's where we're going, and we're going to split up the presentation. So I wanted to start with CCIH's definition of family planning. You've heard from World Vision and the Adventists and other groups. In 2008, CCIH had conducted a study of our members. We have members all over the world, all different denominations, all over the spectrum of what they think about family planning. So we have some members that do include abortion in their family planning definition, but when CCIH goes to the Hill or when we advocate as an organization, we advocate for the common ground. So this is the common ground, that family planning is enabling couples to determine the number and timing of pregnancies, including the voluntary use of methods for preventing pregnancy, not including abortion, that are harmonious with their values and religious beliefs. So that's where everyone agrees. And so that's when I go and talk to folks about our faith-based organizations. That's my point. So here's some facts. We all know this. Family planning prevents abortion. A lot of times in policy circles, primarily in the U.S., people think of family planning and they hear Planned Parenthood or they hear abortion. And it's a lot of just miseducation, to be perfectly honest. And so a lot of time I spend talking to people about family planning is family planning prevents abortion. It reduces abortion. If you time your children well, if you have access to contraceptives, then hopefully you never have to get to the point where abortion is something you have to consider. Family planning protects the health of women by reducing high-risk pregnancies. It protects the health of children and mothers by allowing sufficient time. It enables women to prevent unintended pregnancies, and it enables families to better care for their children. So I don't think these are new. We've heard these from Adrian and our other speakers. So what's going on right now in lovely the United States of America's government system? Well, as you know, what happens next Tuesday?
Elections.
All right, Pamela is the only person who knows. Really? Come on, people. That was really depressing. What are you all going to do next Tuesday that are United States citizens? Are you going to be voting? I hope so. Okay, so the reason I bring this up is not because I'm telling you who to vote for, but because right now nothing is happening in Congress until the elections are over. So I just wanted to bring that up. And then on the right, basically what's going to happen is once the elections are decided, there's basically going to be what we call the lame duck session. And that's how to avoid across-the-board cuts and what to do with the fact that in the United States government, in Congress, we have two chambers, the House and the Senate. And the House and the Senate pass two very different bills with very different numbers for family planning funding. So if you look on here, the House gave us $461 million for family planning and reproductive health overseas programs. That's $146 million below the level that we're being funded at right now. Now, the Senate said, hey, $700 million for family planning and reproductive health, which is more than the $610 million we have right now. Well, in our Congress, you can't move forward until those bills come together and they make one number. So that's just really funny, because that's a really hard process. And I'm sorry if I'm simplifying that, but basically there's just a lot of partisan politics, Republican versus Democrat, Democrat versus Republican, whatever you want to say. And there's different majorities in each house. So in the Senate, the Democrats have the majority, and in the House, the Republicans have the majority. And so that just really affects what happens. All that to say, I don't know what's going to happen. I hope they pick a high number. That's me being selfish. And then the one thing I wanted to talk about internationally was in 2011, CCIH got together with two organizations, the German Foundation for World Population, also known as DSW, and an Indonesian-based organization, Muhammadiyah, to work on a project called Faith to Action. And so DSW gathered a whole bunch of faith leaders in Nairobi, Kenya, to talk about, you know, what is family planning internationally across, you know, as an interfaith group? Where is the common ground, once again, for family planning? And so they came up with a statement, which is on this website, about how as an interfaith group, this is where we're at, this is where we can agree what family planning is. And so there's over 200 signatories on that document, and we're always looking for more secular and leaders of faith, groups of faith, to sign the document. So if you want more information, we can share that, but I just really wanted to talk about that quickly. But I think it's important for you to know that we do U.S.-based policy, but then we're also trying to talk about family planning policy around the world in the big picture. And so this is one of the ways that CCIH is involved in that. So why take action? Why should CCIH be involved in this? We would not be involved in this if our members weren't saying, Joy doesn't like this photo I have of her on the slide. I love it. Because as we know, or as you all know, in many countries, Christian faith-based organizations provide 30% or higher of healthcare services. So if those organizations, if those healthcare clinics, if those churches are providing family planning, and people are saying Christians don't provide family planning, well, that's wrong. And so we're trying to correct those misperceptions. And so that's why, as CCIH, we want to be a part of the conversation. We want to provide that voice, and I think that's really important. I don't ever want to go to Capitol Hill in D.C. and have someone say to me, well, you're a Christian, you don't support family planning. I mean, I've heard that over and over again, and it's just wrong. I mean, there are Christians out there who I think honestly don't understand what family planning means, and they've made it a dirty political word instead of, as a health professional, I think of it as a health term and a public health term, and it just turned into something not like that. Anyway, the reason I have this picture of Joy on the slide under Why Take Action is one of the things that really works for legislators on the Hill is to hear from people who live in other countries who are doing this work and not from me. And so Joy and other members have been kind enough to let us tape them telling their story of what they're going through where they live. And so oftentimes when I meet with a member's office, this is what I share with their staff, so they have a real life face and story when Joy cannot fly from Sudan to meet with the members of her staff with me. So this is just an example. I'm gonna end and let Amy talk to you now, so thanks.
For a few more minutes and bear with me. I just want to give an example of Clayto, who's sitting next to Joy back there, actually went with me to the Kentucky offices, and it was wonderful because they don't, you know, if you don't know much about Kentucky, it's kind of a hard state to win over. So having Clayto and Joy with me at one of those offices is wonderful. They really spoke to some things that I obviously couldn't speak to living in Sudan. So I wish I could tell you guys a story about this, but I don't have time for that. But this is in rural Uganda. This is a birth that I experienced, and luckily this woman delivered healthy babies. I'm not really sure what happened after that, but if you'd like to hear more about that, I can share more about that. Actually, I'm going to go back. So just to give you a little bit of context about why I'm going to be talking about contraceptive security a little bit more than just family planning. Ray and Douglas were involved with that Nairobi Declaration and working with the Institute for Reproductive Health, and a few years ago realized that there was really a gap in what the faith community was doing with contraceptive security. And I'm learning more and more that a lot of people don't really understand what that is, and they're leaving it to these other organizations to handle contraceptive security and not getting involved. So we realized that we should be getting engaged with contraceptive security. So just wanted to give you an idea of if you don't know much about reproductive health supplies security here, you spoke of this because there's an organization called Reproductive Health Supplies Coalition, so I use that term here, just some of the problems associated with this whole issue. If you haven't heard this, 220 million women, I think it's 222, want access to contraception but aren't getting it. That's around the world. And really, despite the fact that we're making all these gains with educating about family planning and healthy timing and spacing of pregnancies, if you don't have the product, you can't do the program. So we have to fill in that missing link. Faith-based organizations and even community-based organizations are not always included in the meetings for planning and forecasting. So we saw that was a need that needs to be met. And also learning more and more, going to different meetings, that the faith community, there's really misperceptions about what we're doing, and people working outside of the faith community think that we aren't doing anything in family planning, so they want to ignore us. And I think sometimes on the other end of it, there might be organizations that don't want to work with the secular groups. So there's really a misunderstanding going on about who's doing what, and some organizations thinking that organizations aren't doing family planning when there are some, but needing to realize that some of us are doing that. I think there's still a lack of political will in some countries to get the contraceptives to where they need to be. And I know if you haven't seen a video called Empty Handed, I wanted to show it, but there's no time for it. I think that's where I got this idea. I don't think I came up with it on my own, but it's funny that Coca-Cola gets in every corner of the globe, a very cold Coca-Cola in rural Mozambique, but we still can't get Cycle B's, other contraceptives to every corner of the globe, which I just find very interesting. So there's a lot of lack of political will. I mean, it's a really loaded statement to make, but a lot of reasons why contraceptives aren't getting there. Maybe the faith communities have something to do with that. And community health workers are just, we all know this, they're all overextended in their work. They're being given more and more tasks to handle. So as far as them handling reproductive health supplies and learning how to use them, sometimes we just were expecting so much. So they're talking more and more in this working group that I'm part of about task shifting and task sharing to address those issues. So just to give you an idea, CCIH joined the Reproductive Health Supplies Coalition earlier in the year in January. That was, we were the first faith-based organization. We were prompted by several organizations to join, and Douglas and I just attended a meeting of that. So that was wonderful for us to get our faces seen, to get the faith-based voice heard, to present on what we're doing. So that was the Reproductive Health Supplies Coalition I have listed here. There's actually, if you haven't heard of that group, some of you probably have, but there's several working groups. It's a free organization to join. You can get opportunities for funding if you join. It's a really good group to get engaged with. There's the Resource Mobilization and Awareness Working Group. There's a System Strengthening Working Group with people that are based in D.C. that are heading that up. The people from the RMA Working Group are actually based in overseas, but so that's a good group. If you haven't heard about them, click on that website and learn more about the Reproductive Health Supplies Coalition. Getting back to my first point here, we developed a guide on getting contraceptives to health facilities with JSI. So if you haven't seen that, you might want to go to our website or click on this link. I actually have resources here I'd love to give out to you guys, just with some of the samples of what we have related to family planning and how you can get to those online. We're also doing family planning webinars, some on contraceptive security. We're hoping to do one soon on HTSP with Adrian and someone from USAID, so be looking out for that one soon. We're really trying to facilitate this dialogue between our members on family planning with the secular community. I don't know if I should use the word secular, but really trying to get people on both sides to realize that faith-based organizations are doing more in family planning than they realize, and getting the organizations that aren't working in family planning to actually do more. So I won't mention one organization, but it's just neat in the past few months how I've seen a progression of one organization going from being very against it to just warming more and more up to it, actually with the help of Adrian and the HTSP method. So that's interesting to see how that's evolving with this one organization. I think they're getting much closer to working family planning. We've translated key documents I have on there, that we've translated some documents into Swahili and French in the document that you just received. We have resources here. That's actually all in that document. And we just wanted to let you know, we'd love for you to follow us. We're on Facebook. We have 6,000 followers or so, so it's a good way to connect with us through Facebook. If you're on Facebook, on Twitter, we're on LinkedIn, and I'm not sure if there's other social media outlets, but we'd love for you to get in touch with us. I know it's a very quick overview, but Mona and I have our email addresses here. We'd love for you to get in touch with us, talk to us afterwards, and learn more about what we're doing and how we can help you, either from a non-faith-based perspective, wanting to learn more about what the faith-based groups are doing, or if you're a faith-based organization, how you can get started working more in family planning or connecting with those who do. So please be in touch with us, and we'd love to hear from you. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy and Mona. We have a bit of time. If you don't know CCIH already, I know some of you do, because some of you are members of CCIH, but you can pick up a brochure from us or visit us. Our booth is number 2713 in the exhibit hall. So we would love to have more of you who want to interact with other people of faith working in global health. Questions, answers, discussion, comments. We don't have a whole lot of time. We can probably go a little bit beyond six.
No, we can't.
Is there another session here?
Well, there is.
I didn't see any listed out there.
We have about 8 minutes.
Okay. So, questions, comments, reactions. Who's going to start?
We didn't say how important this book was.
Let's take questions.
Take questions.
Friendly, ask questions.
Adrian just mentioned this family planning guide, which is a USAID, WHO, Hopkins production. We were just talking to USAID people recently, and we're gonna try to figure out a way to get that book in the hands of hundreds of organizations around the world. I guess it's sort of the Bible for family planning information and technology. So we really want the faith communities who are involved in health work and family planning to have the latest scientific information on that.
So we have
to. So Jennifer.
Well, mine is just a comment. Can
you identify yourself,
okay,
please?
My name is Jennifer Lee, and I was in Malawi for 4 years with an organization that's connected with CHAN, the Lutheran Mobile Clinic, providing primary health care services to the rural areas in central Malawi. And of course, I'm very familiar with the Adventist work there in Malawi. And I just applaud you guys for taking this stance, because it is an area that, even as Christian, like, health professionals, we don't really talk about amongst each other, because we're maybe afraid we're going to offend one another. And we all work within certain frameworks that our Christian organizations allow us to work within certain constraints. It would be interesting to see what kind of even future research and things can come out of the implications or the outcomes that incorporating family planning into the social aspect of what it means to family plan, you know, from a Christian perspective, families talking to one another, and how that, you know, there's been a lot of discussion with gender-based violence and things like that. The impacts of actually getting people to talk about things, and how family units are structured, and family planning and child spacing comes into that, and how it affects each other's relationships. Kind of the approach that we've taken with our organization in segueing into people being okay with our church and our donors, mm-hmm. with us providing certain services. So.
That sounds pretty consistent with what I think we were hearing. Any comments by anyone on that?
I just love her saying people being okay with. You know, it's because we're our own worst enemy.
Yeah. We are.
Who else?
Yeah, I really think that what is important is for the congregations or Islamic to make it I like the way the world vision and the Doug's presentation, how this has become part of the educational process or sermonizing of the church. So if you look at what the most churches preach about, their themes, but health is often the last of the themes that most of our churches, I think if I asked you, including us, was the last time you heard a health-related sermon in your church, you probably won't even remember when the last time was. And yet health, you cannot serve without having health. And so health needs to become a theme, or one of the important themes of our being, both in service to others and to God or to Allah. And if that emphasis becomes part and parcel of our religious culture, we won't have any problems. There may be still some things that we may look at as ethical or moral issues about family planning, but the approach of family planning or spacing being a healthy issue rather than being saved or going to hell, that approach it will be more acceptable, I think, if we can argue on the basis of the fact that your children will be healthier, your wives will be healthier, and you as their provider will be better able to provide for your family. That's an argument that's basically morally Christian or Islamic.
And just one comment on men in Afghanistan get a fairly bad rap when it comes to equity, gender, and so on. But when you talk with men about, they care about their children and their wives. My goodness, and that's directly from them. Say, well, if this is important for our children's health and my wife's health, then sure, and the community health worker should give injections to her here, rather than having her walk down the hill. So I think, these kind of messages about healthy timing and spacing, are technical at one level, but they're very practical.
Yes, sure.
At the family level.
It's amazing to me, comparing our political environment for this issue in the United States to that in other countries. A couple of people alluded to that. I think Mona mentioned that. I'm not sure how the subject has become so toxic in certain political circles in the United States. And I think we're maybe not unique in that regard, but we're certainly an outlier.
Oh.
And that's one of the challenges that we face all the time. Any quick last-minute questions or comments? I have one. Sarla, you mentioned a couple of testimonials as a result of the sermon guides. I don't know how you would do it, but do you have any way, or have you given them any thought to try to find some way of measuring the impact of that kind of resource? Part of the reason that I asked for that is, I worked most of my life for USAID and the World Bank, and in so much of the public health circles, there's so much emphasis on quantitative evaluations, but a lot of the important things are not possible or easy to quantify. And so I think we do ourselves a disfavor when we want to focus only on indicators that you can count and really overlook a lot of other things which maybe are more impactful than things that you can count. And a sermon guide is one example of that kind of thing, and I'm just wondering what your thoughts have been about that.
I think we have looked at both the quantitative and the qualitative testimonials and focus group information coming. We are looking at those districts to see when the district data comes in, is it showing any change?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the piece that USAID would be willing to then sit up and take a look at it. So we are watching that data to be coming in to see and specifically from the health facilities where these churches and the mosques are located. So we are gathering that through the Ministry of Health processes. Because the Ministry of Health in Tanzania especially is very key to roll it out. And they are actually saying we need to figure out and convince donors, whether it's USAID or DFID or any other donor, to provide the funding to roll the 7 guides out. Otherwise, it's a wasted effort that you produce them and then they are not disseminated.
Great, okay, it is 6 o'clock, but I really do want to give a chance. You don't have to say anything, Joy, but you've already seen Joy Mukherjee's photograph. But we're very delighted that Joy and her colleague, Clito, were able to come to this APHA meeting. Joy is the executive director of the Christian Health Association of Sudan and has been a champion, as Mona pointed out, for our advocacy efforts on the Hill. And so if you have anything to say, Joy, I'd like to give you a minute to do that.
I wasn't intending to say anything.
Well, I know you work, and I know I'm putting you on the spot, but I know you well enough that you can manage, even if you're put on the spot.
My only comment is that this session has been very important to some of us to try and understand the different ways the faith-based have actually intervened or presented the issues to different ways. So I'm just fascinated that there were these different interpretations and different ways of working with leaders, but also working in different contexts, and where you put the emphasis that can be heard and that be appreciated. So that's the much I can say, that this was a very useful session. Good choice in terms of the different, I mean, the variety of the messages we understood from the presentation. How we can continue struggling to look at the leaders, the religious leaders, and the earlier on talking to Kathy and letting her know that these institutions, religious institutions, have the best and probably the most efficient structures that get to the bottom of the problem, where the problems are. And we are privileged to have that. And that's what the asset we carry to the health system. Working with the leaders and everywhere you find the religious leader, the religious structure to work with, to influence. So that's all I can say, that the struggle should continue. I see Sudan when it was dancing, but then I also see Sudan when I am ministering in Tanzania, because the leaders are not prepared, you know, they need to be prepared. They would love to say something, but it better be correct.
Yeah.
It better be something they will defend. It's challenged. So those kids are critical. There is the whole army that can be used or works through the leaders, but they just need to be armed with what is it, how to approach it. They are eager. Most of them are eager now, ready to contribute to the cause, but they are just prepared. So the little they all the sessions, all the presentation brought alive the reality in how we can use different ways of getting to the cause, whether it's
Okay, well, that's the last word. Thank you all for coming. Thank you for the presenters for presenting.